TV producer Stephen Moffat, who among other things produced the hit science fiction Doctor Who, commented, quote, "The universe is big, it's vast and complicated and ridiculous," close quote. Well, the universe certainly is big and vast, but ridiculous? Well, I don't think so. And what about complicated? Strangely, as it turns out, in a certain way, the universe is not complicated, but simple. This is the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. Scientists have put forth all kinds of complicated ideas about the universe. Chaos theory and string theory are two examples, very complicated, and in the end, not terribly helpful. Now many scientists are looking the other direction, away from complexity to simplicity. Confused? Well, to be honest, I'm a bit confused myself, and so to begin this After Dinner Scholar podcast, I asked Dr. Scott Olson to tell us what scientists mean by simplicity.
Well, maybe first we could say what I don't mean by that. I mean to be a little provocative to say that the universe is simple. If we look at the universe, if we look at, say, one small part of it, one part maybe we think we understand, say, my own body. If I look at my own body, I read an estimate recently that there may be 30 trillion cells in my body. And in addition to the 30 trillion cells that are, 30 trillion, that's a big number, but there may be 30 trillion cells. And in addition to the 30 trillion cells that are my own, there may be 38 or so trillion bacteria. So there's actually more bacteria on my body than there are cells in my body. And if I look at any one of those cells in my body, not thinking of the bacterium, but just one cell, there may be 100 trillion atoms in that one cell. So altogether, just in my own body, which of course is a very, very small part of the universe, there may be something like 10 to the 26 atoms, right? If you go out and you say, well, what about something that's kind of sizable in terms of the scale of the universe, or at least much bigger than my body? Say, take our solar system, and maybe you generously measure the solar system to have a radius of, say, 100,000 astronomical units, 100,000 times the distance between the Earth and the Sun. Of course, there's a lot more stuff in that, right? And that's only a very small fraction of the whole universe, which may be, you know, that's about 2 light years in radius. And we think the diameter of the observable universe is something like 90 billion light years. So, yeah, it seems like the universe is just insanely complex. There's just so much stuff in it. There's unimaginable amount of stuff in it. But what's fascinating, I think, about all of that stuff is if you look at all the atoms, say, in my body, which, you know, they're all interacting in very complex ways, and you say, well, what causes one atom to do this or to do that, right? We've managed to reduce that to just a few things, right? So the consequences of a few things that seem to happen, those seem to be inordinately complex. But if I ask, why does an atom move this way or that way, there's only a couple answers that we think are possible to that question. We think fundamentally there's, you know, gravity is something that can happen that can pull two things together, or there's an electromagnetic force, and there's two other forces, the weak and the strong forces. So on the one hand, there's just an inordinate amount of complexity in terms of the action that's observable of these laws, but fundamentally there's just a few simple laws as far as we can tell. And one of the major projects of modern physics is to try to reduce those four simple laws to some smaller number, maybe two or even one. Although there appears to be tremendous complexity, there seem to be just a very few number of sort of rules, you know, the way the game is played, that you have to understand how everything will fall out. We don't see, even in something very complicated like a giraffe, you know, when we poke at it, we don't seem to see anything happening apart from these four physical laws, which is quite remarkable. It means that, in a sense, the giraffe is intelligible to us, although, of course, in another sense, it's not. It's so complex the way all these things interact with each other.
Now, I've heard scientists, and particularly computer scientists, talking about well-written software and using the word elegant. Is that kind of the same idea as simplicity? Because the universe certainly is elegant in some ways.
I think that maybe is a helpful way of thinking about it. You know, maybe another way of saying it is this. If we, again, think about the human body, right? And we think about how many little parts there are of it, right? I gave the number 10 to the 26th power, which is just unimaginable, apart from some kind of math. I mean, you can write it down on paper and think of it mathematically, but it's impossible to really imagine what that means. And I don't think there's any particular reason to think sort of a priori that if you pulled apart a human body with all those parts, it would be intelligible. I mean, if there's 10 to the 26th parts of me, why can't there be 10 to the 26th sort of causes of me? Right, and I'd have to understand how this atom worked and how that atom worked, right? And the only way to get a complete picture is to have this undescribable multiplicity of causes that would make it completely unintelligible. But that's not what we find. We find, yeah, there are a lot of atoms, but there's only so many different kinds. You know, there's carbon and oxygen and so on. There's only a few different kinds, and actually those are only made up of a few different kinds of things, quarks, and they only interact in a few different ways. So there's a kind of underlying simplicity, even though the game seems inordinately complicated. I think it might be sort of like playing chess. You know, there's a way that chess is incredibly complicated, but finally it boils down to a few rules that we have to sort of discover, or, well, we have to be taught.
It also makes me think of Legos.
Okay.
You know, these enormously complicated Lego creations that people put together, and they're just little tiny bricks.
Mm-hmm.
On one level, it is very simple.
Now, I guess an interesting consequence of this thinking, this way of thinking about physics, is we can ask questions like, well, why would we prefer one theory over another? So if you think about, say, Galileo's theory of projectile motion or of mechanics, and you compare it to Newton's theory of projectile motion and mechanics, we generally agree that Newton's theory is better. And it seems to be because, it can describe more phenomena, right? Of course, Newton's theory is a lot more complicated than Galileo's theory in the sense that you need a lot more mathematics to work it out. You know, Newton had to give us the calculus to help us understand what he was talking about, whereas Galileo needs something like the arithmetic and geometry that's present in Euclid. But I think one of the reasons why we prefer, another way of saying this, one of the reasons why we prefer Newton's theory, and maybe finally why we'll prefer Einstein's theory over Newton's, is that Newton's theory is a lot simpler than Galileo's. Again, you could ask, well, what do you mean by that? Well, I think what I mean is that you can reduce the theory down to fewer causes. Even though finally there's more to unpack, maybe it's harder to unpack, there are fewer things I need to tell you in order to understand more consequences with Newton's theory. You know, with Galileo's theory, a consequence of his theory is that if I throw a ball, I'll get a parabolic trajectory. And Newton's theory not only gives us that, he says if you throw a ball, you can get a parabolic trajectory. He also shows us if you throw a ball hard enough, you can get a moon, right? That's essentially what a moon is. It's just a ball that's been thrown so hard that it started falling and hasn't stopped. Right. So there are fewer things I need to tell you that have more consequences. It's like there are fewer axioms or fewer postulates. Maybe another way of thinking about this is if we said, let's do some Euclidean geometry, and I can tell you the rules, the postulates at the beginning. And I could do Euclidean geometry that way. I could also have just started with the Pythagorean theorem and not prove it. I could just take it as something I assume at the beginning. And the things I conclude from those two theories of mathematics would be the same, but I'd prefer to not have assumed the Pythagorean theorem at the beginning, right? It seems unnecessary. It's better to reduce my knowing to fewer causes. It feels like I've got a better science if I can reduce it to fewer causes. And it seems like Newtonian mechanics has done that over Galilean mechanics. Now, what's surprising, I think, is that I think we can say the same thing about Einstein's relativity. In fact, I think we can say that it's about as simple as you can imagine. If I tell you the main axiom, the main thing I need to assume in Einstein's mechanics is incredibly simple. It's just that the physics that you experience in one place will be the same as the physics you experience in another place. It doesn't matter if I do physics over here, over there, I'll get the same physics. And it's hard to imagine anything simpler than that, really. But the consequences of that, the things, you have to unpack that. And it turns out you need more sophisticated mathematics to unpack that and see what's present inside of that. The mathematics are far more complicated than the mathematics you need for Newton's mechanics. So there's a kind of paradox, I think, where the simpler the theory is in the sense that it contains more potentially, right? There's a kind of virtual power that the axioms of a theory have, the more difficult it is to actually reason with it. So much so that we can barely conclude anything about general relativity now. The mathematics is just too hard.
At our adult week, the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, this coming June, our topic is Beauty is Truth, Science and the Catholic Imagination. And my guess is that we'll talk something about simplicity. So give us a little preview of that in the Catholic imagination.
Thomas says, and I think it's we should say that all of creation is a kind of reflection of God. He has these startling passages where he says things like, you can tell by the way rocks behave that they love God, right? which is a very curious thing. What does that mean? You know, but he seems to be saying very clearly that when we understand what creation does, or when we look at creation and understand it, we see somehow a reflection of God. So we were very excited, I think, in my recent course on relativity to be thinking about the simplicity of natural laws and to realize that there's an analogy we can consider with God, who, of course, is very simple, but his consequences are so complex that they exceed our understanding. And in the same way, you know, all of the physical phenomena that are present in the observable universe, as far as we know, are reducible to four laws. The consequence, the action of those laws, is so complicated we can't understand it. But creation, there's a kind of cause underlying all of that complexity, which is finally very simple. So it seems like, in this way, what modern science is telling us is that creation, you know, really does reflect the Creator, the kind of simplicity that's in God. One of the things I think that's fascinating about all this is that amongst all the complexity we see in the universe, the world seems to be intelligible. I don't think there's any reason to think that it had to be that way. You know, if we were creatures like ants, we wouldn't have the capacity to sort of get anywhere in our understanding of the universe. But mankind seems to be able to kind of keep getting farther along, which is to say the universe not only seems to be simple in the way we describe, but it also seems to be intelligible, to be knowable. And so I think that really suggests something about what man is, that he's able to know things. I even go so far as to suggest I think it's kind of a proof of God's existence. Thomas, I think, says in the compendium that the fact that we can know something, like I can think of an apple, when I do that, there's a way in which the apple is in my head. But of course, apples are not in my head when I think about them. How is that possible? Well, it's possible because my intellect is immaterial. And so there's a way in which, in an immaterial way, I can have the apple in my head, right? For me, when I realize that the human mind has that power, it almost immediately feels to me like there's a God, because at that point I realize that I'm immaterial, therefore I'm not subject to corruption, I'm immortal. It seems like a natural consequence that amongst, you know, all of us immortal beings have been created by an immortal being, and that God exists. If the apple, which I can understand, demonstrates to me that my intellect is immaterial and therefore that I'm immortal, it seems much more obvious to me that my contemplating the entire universe demonstrates to me that I have an immaterial intellect. And for that reason, along the same lines, that God exists.
The Old Testament prophet Baruch wrote that God is, "He who sends forth the light, and it goes, called it, and it obeyed him in fear. The stars shone in their watches and were glad. He called them, and they said, "Here we are." They shone with gladness for him who made them. This is our God. No other can be compared to him. If the topic, science and the Catholic imagination, appeals to you, plan to be here in Lander this coming June 7th to 12th for the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought. For more information, go to our website, wyomingcatholic.edu/WSCT. That's wyomingcatholic.edu/WSCT. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.